Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Your name, please, your name.
ESPN 97.5, KFNZ, Mont Belvieu, Houston. Brought to you by Zadok Jewelers. The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, one in the books, two to go. Second hour of the show, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on a Monday in the big city of Houston, Texas. And it is a great honor to bring in a good friend from NBA broadcasting circles back in the day and a member of three of those Bulls championship teams, Bill Wennington. My man Bill, now known as half of Chuck and Duck, the Bulls radio team with Chuck Swirsky, who's always known to push the envelope and get a little dicey. But Bill, as I mentioned through the first hour, a member of the Canadian Basketball Hall of Fame, Final Four appearance with a great team full of NBA players in 85 at St. John's, and then a long and illustrious NBA career. Billy, good to talk to you, man. What's going on?
Joel, I'm hanging in there, man. You forgot to mention that when I played for the Mavericks, we used to come up there and beat Akeem's butt all the time.
See, yeah, that's the kind of thing that would lead into this never-ending discussion in Houston, Texas. So we might as well just pop the top on it right away, because obviously it is never-ending, and I'm sure you hear about it too. If Michael doesn't go to baseball, obviously people here very, very staunch in believing that the Rockets still would have won the two titles. A lot of people elsewhere seem to think you guys would have prevailed. Now, if you can, take off your Bulls gear for a second and just give me as honest an opinion of a matchup breakdown as you can between those two teams.
I really do believe Michael's the GOAT. I really do. His drive to win, that competitive spirit that he has, and how hard he pushed himself was amazing. Now, I also will say this. Hakeem Olajuwon's the best big man that I had to play against. Now, I played against Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but near the end of his career, and I'm sure Kareem in his prime was unbelievable and unstoppable. His skyhook in the mid-'80s was still unbelievable. But Hakeem was a seven-footer that could run the floor as fast as a guard, could rebound and defend as well as anyone his size anywhere, and yet his low post moves and his mid-range game were absolutely phenomenal. So for me, for that reason, he was one of the toughest guys to guard. But I just, the defense that we had, and I will say this too, Houston always gave us problems. Now, they gave us problems when we were playing without Michael, but his drive and the way he made his teammates better by pushing them, and as you've seen in the documentary, it's not always pushing them nicely, because he wants to win, and he's going to make sure that you're doing your best out there to help him win a championship, because that was his ultimate goal. No other agenda. He wasn't worried about points, wasn't worried about rebounds or assists. He wanted to win, and that's something that helped Phil Jackson keep everyone on the same page. It was all about winning. So you had 12 guys on that team that were all on the same page every day wanting to win. And that's why I give the edge. Hey, was Houston a great team? They really were a very good team. But I just give that edge to Michael and the way he pushed everyone around him to be better. And with Michael, Scotty, and Dennis, it would have been great. And if Michael didn't retire, maybe Horace would have stayed. And Horace was just as good, a little bit different than Dennis was, but more of an offensive threat. So it would have been a great series, but I would have to give the edge to the Bulls because I just think Michael puts it over the top.
Bill Wennington joins us on Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Bill, what
you know, you hear about Jordan. You said he was the greatest of all time, his will to win and competitiveness. Did it ever get old, though? Because it felt like he never turned it off. And if I'm around somebody like that at some point, it's got to get annoying.
Well, do you play blackjack at all?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you like losing?
Oh, no. No, not at all.
If you go on a streak and you win 100 hands in a row, are you going to quit?
No, never.
No, so no, it doesn't get tired. When you're winning, it doesn't get tired. You don't. The attention does. All the fans and all the stuff off the court gets tough, but on the court stuff, it didn't get old. We all liked competing. That was the nice thing about that team. Everyone loved to compete, and Phil and Michael made sure that we were competing every day in practice. Our practices were hard, 100% all the time. There were no walkthroughs, but the nice thing about it was Phil understood, and you even saw it in the Last Dance last night. You know, Phil gave a day off. Michael was able to go practice, and then Michael played golf. Michael talked about it. Yeah, Phil's great. A younger coach probably would have had us in there practicing today, but Phil knows that we need a day off. And that's the way Phil was. And we'd have training camp, and our practice would be, back then you could practice as many times and as long as you want, but our practice would be about 2 to 2.5 hours tops. But as the season went down, our practice got down to 45 minutes to an hour, just a hard practice, and we're in and out. And Phil knew what he had to push us to do, and we knew that if we got in there and just worked hard for an hour, it was over.
Well,
and
Billy,
that was the beautiful thing of it.
You mentioned it. I experienced it to a lesser degree with Yao and having Yao when we went to China. And I equated it to the Beatles when we went through China on like a tour of where he grew up and stuff like that. And it was 10 deep for a half mile at a time, shaking the bus just to get a glimpse of Yao. And that's obviously Yao in China. Michael had that everywhere in the world, and it was like for you being like the band for the Beatles. I mean, just talk about that, the fact that he, you know, people don't get it when they think, well, that's just when he goes out and plays and things like that. No, he couldn't go anywhere or do anything, and you were there with him pretty much every step of the way, where dude couldn't live a regular life, like a daily, everyday life, because of how everybody always was grabbing at
him. Yeah, it was tough. And it was fun to go out with Michael a couple of times. Michael, Scotty, and Dennis, they all had the same thing. But it wasn't fun a lot because you couldn't do anything. We were in a city, and we all went to eat. And it was kind of a team thing, and they cordoned off, they block off the bar or where we were sitting and having a couple of drinks. We were there 15, 20 minutes. And all of a sudden, there were 100 people outside. Now, you got to understand, 15, 20 minutes, there's 100 people outside. There's no social media. All you have is cell phones, which really, texting was very primitive at that time. So people just had word of mouth and cell phones. They had to call people. There was no, like, social media blast, and everyone got it. So within 15 minutes, there's 100 people outside. We're looking and say, oh, it's getting crazy. And Michael just starts laughing. He's like, yeah. You haven't seen anything yet. And he was right, because within another half hour, there was over 1,000 people outside, and it just grew and grew. And by the time we left, after we ate and left, the street was packed. When he got out, we had to cut a path through to get it, because you couldn't get anywhere because there were so many people there. And it was like that everywhere you went. Once they found out Michael was there, it was unbelievable, and the crowds grew. So it got difficult, and I understood why Michael didn't go out a whole lot, and why he had three security guards with him all the time, and why he wanted to stay in his room 90% of the time and just hang out with his friends playing cards, because it was too difficult to go out and just relax, because you can't be yourself in that crowd. You're always on stage. The light is on, and you're always on go.
You know, they talked about in the documentary there being a leak in the locker room. Did you get the sense that there was definitely inside information coming from a player? Because they mentioned it could be a player, it could be a coach, it could be an owner. They didn't. Did you get a sense of who it might be?
Well, I wasn't there when that was going on. That was when Horace was there. That was the first three-peat. And that was Sam Smith's book that came out. So I wasn't there. But there was a lot of stuff going on, and it was both sides. Because it began to be a political battle between management and the coaching staff. So you don't know exactly where it came from, but stuff was getting out. And unfortunately, there wasn't a plumber that could fix that leak.
Now, Bill Wennington with us from the Chicago Bulls, and obviously it was a member of the second three-peat with the Bulls that's being chronicled in this Last Dance. Bill, question for you about Jerry Krause, because you've said, look, Jerry's a nice guy. I've said on this program, Jerry Krause belongs in the Hall of Fame for the moves that he made as a general manager and some shrewd and savvy moves. Now, unfortunately, he couldn't get out of his own way in terms of the statement he made about the organization wins championships, not the players on the floor, and that whole kind of wanting credit for everything. But you knew Jerry well, and obviously he did a lot of great things to make that team what it was. But do you guys ever sit back, too, as like a follow-up, answer that, and then just tell me, too, do you guys look at that and go, if he hadn't pulled the plug in 98, how far could this team have gone?
Well, I was talking about it with my son a couple weeks ago when this first started out. And it was interesting because you start to see, when you're there every day, you start to see all the tough things. The injuries starting to mount up. Scottie Pippen's back was getting bad. Obviously, everyone's getting a year older. I'm older. Michael's a year older. Kerr and Judd Bush are all getting older. But then the next year was the lockout year. So, and we didn't start until in January. Or was even later than that.
Yeah,
it was,
yep.
That's a long time ago now. But so I do think if they didn't disband the team, it was very possible and likely that the Bulls could have done it. It would have been a lot harder. Obviously, three in a row is difficult. Four in a row is unbelievably hard. But it's tough. But in a shortened season like that and having that much longer to relax and rest and tend to your body, I think it would have been in the Bulls' favor, especially with an older team like that.
One thing they talked about, too, in the documentary was Rodman's Vegas vacation. It didn't seem like it was that big of a distraction to the team. Is that a correct statement, or did you got
that? That's 100% correct. I mean, Dennis was Dennis, and Dennis was fun to be around. He's a great teammate. When you did go out with him, he's one of the most generous people you'd ever meet in your life, and wants everybody to have fun and wants you to go out and have a good time. Dennis created this persona that became bigger than life, and I don't want to say consumed him, but he became a big part of that. And it was fun because for us, going out with Dennis wasn't Dennis. It was the people that came up to Dennis that was the entertaining thing. He'd get all kinds of walks of life coming up to Dennis and wanting to talk about tattoos, body piercings, and all different things. So that was when we went out with Dennis. That was the stuff you're looking at and watching. And being with Dennis was fun, and he was kind of quiet. If you went out to lunch with him and not at nighttime when it was a showtime, Dennis was really quiet, really is an introvert, and doesn't talk a lot. He's a great conversationalist if you ask him questions and talking, but he's not one that's going to be one of those guys like Joel, social butterfly, and going out and just talking to everybody.
All right, good. I was going to ask another question about the Bulls, but screw that. I'm going to go at you. So now you go from, in the documentary, it's just straight beard and goatee. But all of a sudden, it's like your face is a blank canvas, and you're sculpting this what is it, a martini glass under your lip and the triangles and all that. I mean, what, during the quarantine, are you going to go into facial grooming? Where did all this artwork on the face come from for you?
Well, in the Last Dance, I got it's kind of a Fu Manchu with a little chin music on the bottom.
Yeah.
Right now, I got a full goatee going down about 2-3 inches below my chin right now because it's the COVID-19 beard, so to speak.
And it's majestic. It is definitely
James
majestic.
Harden on us?
Am I what?
Going James Harden on us?
Well, it's not a full beard. It's just on the chin. I keep it trimmed to, if you're familiar with shaving, a level one on a beard trimmer on the sides up to the ears. But then just down below the mouth and the mustache comes all the way down. And it's pretty long, so it's a little bit like James Harden, but it's just not all the way up.
And that's all self-induced. Everything we see on The Last Dance was a self-induced Bill Wennington design?
No, that was I've been sporting that mustache for a long time. Obviously when I played, I had the goatee.
Oh,
and I want to say about
the interview after you put when you had it, now it's gray and there's that long triangle for the chin music.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I never thought of it that way. The triangle is for the triangle offense, and the spacing
right.
is perfect, isn't it?
That's fantastic. So true story now. You tell the people, you got to capitalize on a lot being on that Bulls team, and you were a contributing member. But tell the people about the beef, Wennington.
It's a beautiful thing in Chicago because the team was doing so well. McDonald's was doing it. Started off with a double cheeseburger commercial, but being that I was a communications major and at St. John's, and I knew everything that was going on about production, I hung out with all the guys, the directors, the cameramen, the soundmen, and was just talking. They went back and after they shot the commercial, they were just talking to the president and the marketing team of McDonald's here in Chicagoland, and they thought I was such a good guy that they thought of this idea of making a play on Beef Wennington, like a Beef Wellington, and make it a burger. So for 3 months here in Chicagoland, we had a Beef Wennington. It was a bacon, spicy bacon cheeseburger. It was delicious.
That's outstanding. Hey, we had one of our listeners tweet us, El Jefe, Bill, and he had a question for you. He wanted to know, did Jordan ever give his teammates free Jordans?
Free Jordans. If you remember, you had to get his permission to wear his shoes. And either you were a sponsored guy by the Jordan brand or you had to get permission. I ended up wearing Jordans. I hurt my foot. I had plantar fasciitis. So Michael's shoes were made really well, and they had a graphite shaft in them, so the bottom of them was stiffer. And it really helped. If you had plantar fasciitis, it was a great shoe to have, one of the best. And all the guys that started having problems with their feet started wearing his shoes, and their feet got better. So, yeah, we got them. And if you needed some, he was willing to make sure that you or your kids had what you needed.
I'm curious, Bill, you know, we're watching the documentary and we're seeing this side of Jordan and the Bulls and stuff that a lot of us had never seen before. Do you feel like the parts that you were involved in, obviously, is it being represented fairly and accurately, or are there some things where you're like, yeah, it didn't really happen like that, or they took some creative license there?
So far, it's all accurate. Everything I've seen and what I remember is very accurate and it's funny because when the first couple episodes started and they talked about Scottie Pippen delaying a surgery, you forget about that because winning covers up a lot. Now, I'm not saying if I forgot about it because it was a bad thing and I put it away. It's not. For us, Scottie doing that, we understood it. He was part of our family. He was a teammate. And we all understood he was frustrated and he was handling it his way. But we also knew that we needed Scottie Pippen back to play for us to win a championship. And there was a little while when Scotty was really disgruntled, and he did say he wanted to be traded. But to us in the locker room, he was still Scotty, and he came back to us and said, "No, I'm staying. I'm good." And you know, and he said he was sorry and got back on track. And obviously, things turned out really well.
How bad do you think it is that Jerry Krause can't give his side? I mean, one of the things, because he has kind of been the target of the team in so many ways for a lot of the different things with Scotty and Michael, that it's almost a shame that he's not there to at least be able to give the other side. We always say there's two sides to every discussion, you know, any discussion, but it just seems like it's a shame he can't.
I'm sorry, I'm having a real hard time hearing the question.
Yeah, Bill, let me translate. Joel's having issues technically, but he basically said, how bad is it that Jerry Krause isn't here to be able to tell his side of the story?
It's tough. Again, I'm going from a guy that I like people, and Jerry as a person was a good guy. Jerry as a general manager talking about basketball was very quirky and isolated and very secretive and was difficult to work with. I get that. I'm hoping that over time Jerry would be able to explain himself better, and it is tough that he's not here, but again, when he was here trying to explain himself, he didn't do a very good job of it. And he could, as you said, he couldn't get out of his own way. So I do like Jerry as a person very much. I saw him playing with my kid, and that's really what made me realize he's a good man and a good person. But business-wise, he was difficult to work with. And if you had a problem negotiating a contract and you had no leverage, he was going to take advantage of that.
Well, Joel's texting me another question, Bill, and I think it's a good one. Why do you think MJ took so long to release this documentary?
I don't know if it was particularly MJ alone to release it. I think it's been in the works for a long time, and Here's my understanding of the situation. When the NBA came in 1997-98 and put the cameras in a locker room and everywhere and the guys were following us around, the NBA had a collective bargaining licensing agreement that all NBA players had to sign, except for Michael Jordan. So Michael had his own deal. So they had to negotiate a deal with Michael to agree to put this out. Also, Phil Jackson wasn't part of licensing, so they had to agree with Phil Jackson, had to agree to everything. And I don't know the personal reasons why Michael was never on board and didn't want it to happen or wanted to wait, but I think timing and everything worked out perfectly right now with this pandemic that's going on and all sports being postponed to a later date. The timing couldn't be better because it definitely gives us all something to do on here in the States on Sunday night and for the rest of the world on Netflix, but it's been phenomenal, but I don't really know why it's taken so long, and I'm sure Michael has his reasoning, but I don't know what it is.
Well, Bill, on behalf of Joel, since he's having technical issues, thank you for joining us.
Tell me something I don't know.
You know what's funny, Bill? This mic don't work. I could take this opportunity to tell you that when this show started today at 1 o'clock Central, the first 7 minutes, he busted my balls about having technical problems on a live chat I do every night. And look at him now, Bill. That's listen, I appreciate you. Joel appreciates you. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us your insight into the documentary and what it was really like playing with Jordan and on those Bulls teams.
My pleasure. Great times and anytime, fellas.
All right. Well, next time, Bill, we appreciate you. All right. We'll be back right after this. That's Bill Winnington, Chicago Bulls champion. We'll be back right after this. Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Hello! To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net. You're listening to The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank, Barry Laminack, and Nick Sharara.
That was one truth and two lies. Welcome back, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. No Joel Blank, technical issues. Talk about karma. That's what he gets. Of course, Nick Sharara not here. It's his off day. It's myself, Barry Laminack. Aaron is holding it down. Dale had hour number one. Aaron has hour number two and three. If you want to reach the show, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. You can call that number or you can also text that number. And if it doesn't suck and it's not awful or mean, I'll read it. Well, sometimes I read the mean text, so no big deal. You can also tweet at Barry is funny, at Pac-Man Joel with a K, at Aaron is blitzed. Is that still right, Aaron? At Aaron is blitzed?
Yes, sir.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, you can tweet, you can call, you can text, do whatever you want. A couple things. I'll get to the text line real quick while we work on getting Joel back. But somebody asked, hey, guys, did you see where ESPN will be airing Korean baseball? And then they said, I'm partial to the Samsung Lions, mainly because it's the only team I can pronounce. Go Lions. I did see that there's going to be baseball on ESPN. And I'm pretty pumped about it just because it's actually something to watch. There's going to be exclusive English language broadcasting. So, oh, Joel, you back, buddy?
Yeah, I'm very pissed off because this is right in the middle of Bill,
remember
but
the
I appreciate it.
When the
yeah,
karma
I
thing.
Heard
that's,
you. I heard you.
See, that's how that works, buddy. That's what I think we know whose side karma is on.
Really?
My side.
How many technical issues did you have this weekend? Okay.
Who's but now when it counts, bub. No, that was great, dude. Good get on your part. Getting
Thank
Bill
you.
Winnington to join us the day after another couple episodes of The Last Dance, and he was outstanding, man. He was great.
He is well such a good dude, and you know what's funny is he now works with, and he knows, I got that little dig in at the start. Chuck Swirsky is their play-by-play guy he works with. Chuck could not be more straight-laced, religious, by the book. And Bill is a lot of what you heard today and a lot of what you have seen of, you know, typical kind of big guy, carefree, you know, having a good time, likes to go out and have some drinks, do some things. And it's like the complete odd couple, and they make it work, but it's always a running joke where I always go, hey, did you cuss on the air today, or did you do any kind of, you shouted the devil while you were doing your prep work? And he's all like, yeah, you know how that would work, but he's a great dude.
Yeah, he seems like it. Really cool, down to earth. That was good to get that insight, because I was curious to ask somebody involved with that documentary, how accurate is it? I want to know, because when we watch it, you're thinking, all right, is this true? Because I did end up watching half of the 8th episode of The Tiger King with Joel McHale. I actually was digging it a little bit. It wasn't as bad as you had made me think it was going to be. It wasn't great. You were right. But it could have been worse, I thought.
Well, that's not the one I was kiboshing even more was the TMZ one.
Oh, okay. Well, the one on Netflix wasn't too bad. But circling back to that, you realize that, they painted people in a different light. You know, they made the Tiger King look great. They made these other guys look bad. And they're all like, nah, he was a jerk. To a person almost so far, they've all been like, he deserves to be in jail. He was an awful human being. So you get the sense that that could have happened in this documentary as well. Are they making Jordan look better than he is? Are they making other guys look worse? Are they stretching the truth on certain things? And so it was refreshing to hear Bill Whittington say, no, pretty accurate. Everything is as is right now. So that's good.
Well, it's going to be interesting because if you saw the preview for next week, they literally are going to talk about the fight in practice where, if you don't know, I mean, hard to believe Steve Kerr would punch anyone, let alone the fact that Steve Kerr punched Jordan in practice. Jordan punched him in the eye, and it was the only time Michael was kicked out of a practice. And that's the kind of stuff that, you know, Bill and those guys had to endure when he talked about how intense practice was. I think it goes back to what you said when you interviewed Q Demps for your YouTube show. The fact that the great ones always practice. Michael was a stickler for practice, and he went at you hard. And so it's going to be interesting to see, because I had mentioned, they said that Jordan really comes across looking like the bad guy in the last two episodes and then the next one. I don't think he came across looking like that bad of a guy in the last two.
Uh-uh.
But I think
he looked like he had personal issues, you know, gambling stuff like that. But that's, I mean, okay, who was without sin cast the first stone, right? I mean,
right.
We all have our issues and vices, and if he, as long as he never bet on basketball, I quite honestly don't care if he gambles or gambled. Well, okay, you bet on your golf game, so you got the money to do it. It's like you said, I did agree with him on that point. I'm not broke. I'm not bankrupt. I have the money. You know, my kids don't suffer. My wife don't suffer. So what's the big deal? What's the harm? Totally agree with that.
Well, and you know what? What else, Barry, is the one thing that crossed my mind on that subject too was when they did all this about the notorious, you know, gambler and shady dude that ended up going to trial. Obviously, Michael had the means to back up just what you just said. Any bet that he made, he could back it up. So that lends me to believe maybe some of what happened to his dad was gambling related, and some of it was that he testified against that guy. You never know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Because you remember now, there was another guy that wrote a book that ended up being one of those guys that gambled with him on the golf course and played cards with him and then wrote the book. And obviously Michael's done with you then, but the guy was trying to get his like 5 seconds of fame. But, you know, he insinuated too, obviously large numbers being thrown about cash wise. But anytime you're involved in any kind of gambling like that, where the numbers are that high, whether you plan on it or not, people are going to want to get involved in those games that are crooked gambling people and big time kind of illegal gambling people, because they want the ability to try and cash in on that.
Yeah, totally agree.
So, all right, we'll get a quick break here. Hopefully the technical issues with my side of things are behind us, and we can roll through the second half of the show. Back with more Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
You got the cab, can't afford
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Suspects, Barry, myself, and Aaron Rabel as we roll through a Monday on the big show. What are you laughing at, Barry?
Well, apparently, you may need to call your boy.
Who?
So we got a text from Cowboy Trav, and he's like, "Well, I think I've upset 790." I was like, "What? What?" It says Matt Thomas opened up his radio show with "What Up H Town," and it pissed me off.
What?
So Cowboy.
What should
Trav,
we do?
So Cowboy Trav went after him. Well, I mean,
no. His thing is what's up, lunchtimers and strippers, and he's done that.
Yeah.
That's brutal. Well, you know what it shows? He listens to the show. Smart guy.
That's it. You're just like, yeah, whatever.
I mean, I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, listen, if there are some people that get a pass, I would. But apparently, Cowboy Trav went after him and. Now, he said, "I think I've made everybody over there mad."
So, well, let's just be honest. And Aaron Rabel, having worked over there as well, can also chime in on this. But love Matt to death. But you want to talk about, we've all talked about the fact that we can be sensitive. There is no one more sensitive on the planet than Matt Thomas. So if Cowboy Trav went after him,
Oh, Lord,
he went in the tank and needs an oxygen mask and a scuba suit. That's how far he goes in the tank on that stuff. So you got to be careful.
Is that accurate, Aaron?
I don't know if I'd say he's that sensitive.
Are you kidding me?
Not from anything I've ever messed with, like when I've ever made fun of him or anything. Maybe it's because I'm a nobody.
My goodness, do I have stories for you. But look, and that's why, it's only because he cares, and he's a great human being, Matt Thomas. But yeah. No, he's as sensitive gets. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Look at that. Well, hey, speaking of being sensitive, Don Shula,
yes,
has passed. The great Don Shula passed away today, May 4th. 90 years old. I haven't seen anything that says cause of death yet. I'm sure that's going to take a little bit of time, but no word on cause of death yet. But you talk about a legendary career. Dude spent 33 years around pro football.
Yep.
33 years. That is a long time to be around anything.
And obviously,
wife,
people don't look at it, the body
football,
of work. They know he's known as being the coach of the only undefeated team from start through Super Bowl. But, yeah, when you mention stuff like that, I mean, the longevity, I don't know if it still stands. He was the winningest, had the most wins of any coach in the NFL, in NFL history.
Still the winningest.
By 10.
It goes Shula, George Halas, then Bill Belichick. And Belichick's not even close yet. Of course, Shula had the most, or not the most games, but the second most games coached in NFL history in 490. So, winning percentage wise, though, I was looking it up. You know me, Mr. Numbers guy, 11th all time in winning percentage, Don Shula. I think he goes down as one of the greatest coaches of all time.
Oh, absolutely, no question.
I mean, when you can coach a team to a perfect season and Super Bowls and win like he won. I would certainly say he was probably at least top five, right?
Is it fair to say that Dolphins team was considered a dynasty by some just because of the fact that they won multiple Super Bowls and they had such a lineup of guys that ended up in the Hall of Fame?
You kind of feel like that. I feel like once you go through a perfect season and it's the one and only perfect season in league history, yeah, I could see where you'd say that, okay, that's definitely a dynasty.
Yeah, because you look at all the different guys from Larry Zonka and Bob Greasy, and I don't know if Greasy's in the Hall of Fame or not, but they had Bonacani, and they had so many guys that were talented on that Dolphins team that ended up being in the Hall of Fame. And like you said, an undefeated season, And you talk about a great run. He had a great run as a coach, and at 90 years old, that's a great run as a human being. And,
boy,
you know, he is laid to rest still knowing that the Patriots didn't do it. They lost to the Giants in the Super Bowl, and his team is still the only undefeated team to win it all. So,
yeah, all right, back-to-back Super Bowl champs, I think the year before. So they won back-to-back in 72, 73. They were the AFC champs in 71. So a three-year run there where AFC champs and then two-time Super Bowl champs. That's pretty strong. And in that time, they lost a total of five games over three seasons and had one tie. It's pretty damn good.
Yeah, I'm trying to Google Hall of Famers from that. What year were they perfect?
72.
Okay, so let's. I want to see.
The roster in front of me, if you.
Okay, but so I'm just trying to think of Hall of Famers off that team. I know there was a lot of All Pros, but Hall of Famers from 1972 Dolphins. There has to be a lot of them because obviously that was old school times when the game was different. But
I remember Mercury Morris because I had one of his. Football cards. I had a Mercury Morris football card, which I was like, it was one of my oldest cards at the time. And so that made me kind of start to try to figure out who is this Mercury Morris and what is up with this Dolphins team. And that's when I started to learn about, obviously I wasn't around for it, but I started reading about them and figuring it out just because of Mercury Morris. I'm trying to see here.
So here, I got some of it. So you've got Bobby Bethard, who was a longtime general manager in the league with the Redskins, but he was the director of player personnel in 72 for 5 years. Bonacani, the linebacker, was on that perfect season. Larry Zonka, fullback.
Yeah.
Bob Greasy, the quarterback.
Paul Warfield was on there. Well, I don't know if he was a Hall of Famer, but...
Yep, Paul Warfield is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Jim Langer, one of their offensive... And Larry Little, both of their offensive linemen.
Oh, yeah, Larry Little
linemen,
for sure.
Both were Hall of Famers. Shula, Hall of Famer. That's a pretty good run. That's a pretty staunch set of people that are in the Hall of Fame representing that, just that 172 team and the people around it. So, very cool stuff there. So, rest in peace, Don Shula, and congrats on a great run on and off the football field. So,
Don't forget Garo Yepremian.
I don't think he's in the Hall of Fame, but no one
could
forget Garo.
What?
He was famous for the kick that he didn't kick, that he tried to throw, that he threw behind him like a waffle.
What?
In the Super Bowl? Yeah. I think that was
Super
Bowl.
Why have we not discussed this travesty, this injustice? Garo Yepremian? Not in the Hall? Well, why is there even a Hall of Fame if he's not in it? That's what
you
I
need to
start know.
Campaigning for that right now as we speak. All right, at least I'm speaking and you can hear me. I feel better. We're going to continue to roll on with hour number two of the show. We'll put a bow on hour two and start hour number three down the road, but we got one segment left. Come on back for hour number two's finale right here on ESPN 97.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank, Barry Laminack, and Nick Sharara.
Hey, Nick's out. That means Aaron Raybould's in. Final 2 hours of this show and then all of his show, The Blitz. As we continue to kick around other things, if you missed it early on, we had Bill Wennington, who was on those Bulls teams, and obviously is part of the documentary, The Last Dance, so go back and check that on the podcast when you get a spare moment. We were talking the passing of Don Shula before the break, and then the other football news, or at least one of the other football stories that caught my attention this weekend, Barry, was that Andy Dalton decided to sign with the Cowboys. And, I mean, obviously there aren't that many choices still out there for him to be had. But the fact that I get it, he lives in Dallas now. He's got a house there. He went to high school here in Katy. so he wants to be close to home. So for 1 year to stay in his own house, at least Jameis Winston should have taken note. 1 year, $3 million with incentives that could get higher than that. But the fact that Jacksonville's quarterback situation is somewhat up in the air, the fact that New England doesn't have a proven veteran starting quarterback that they're comfortable with yet, I just thought maybe he signed too soon.
You're probably right. But then, you know, you wait around and you don't know what happens to those kinds of positions. And if you have the opportunity to play, and, you know, kind of like what we talked about with Jameis Winston, because you don't know, maybe he put the feelers out and everybody was like, nah, we're good. We'll pass. So maybe that was part of it, because I imagine that's why Jameis Winston took $1.1 million to be a backup for the Saints, is he probably reached out to teams like, you know, that needed a quarterback, and like the Patriots, and they passed. So you don't know if that's the case. I would assume that would be why he signed before all those teams filled their starting quarterback positions. But two, I mean, let's be real. It's a pretty good opportunity, and man, I don't know, what did they say what the deal was for?
It was about $3.5 million, and then incentives. So he's getting at least three. Obviously, it's not what he was going to make with the Bengals, but he stays home. And again, depending on what happens with this Dak situation, or if Dak holds out, he knows that he's playing for a great team. He's got a chance for a ring. It's just, you know, I thought that there were better opportunities for him to potentially better himself financially and playing time-wise, especially, at least in the short term, and then figure it out. But he's got a chance to win, too. So, you know, I don't know.
Well, the same reason why it was smart for Jameis Winston to go to New Orleans is the same reason why it's smart for Andy Dalton to go to Dallas. And the same reason why it's smart for Dallas to sign Andy Dalton. As you don't know
it's a little
with Dak Prescott.
Well, that's a Jerry Jones move, too, to basically – that's a subliminal
leverage.
Message from Jerry Jones to Dax camp.
Of course,
sure. Yeah,
it's leverage, and so it's a brilliant decision on both their parts. And if you're Dak, you're like, oh, really? Okay, well, but you know, Dak. At the same time, I don't know if he trusts himself in the market like he would trust with the Cowboys. And what I mean by that is, does he think he can get max dollars as and be considered one of the greatest or one of the great? Or one of the better quarterbacks, I should say, in the NFL. He may feel that way, but that may prove to not be the case. So,
but here's the thing:
Cowboys a shrewd move by Andy Dalton, because he could be the quarterback of the Cowboys in 2021.
Right.
Very possible.
But here's the thing on Dak, Barry. According to several different people that have made this public, Dak has passed on being the highest paid quarterback in the league with an extension from the Cowboys. He's betting on himself maybe too much, thinking that he can get even more or he's worth even more. I mean, regardless of, and we talk about it all the time, from Matt Stafford being the highest paid quarterback for a while. If your time is up at the right time and timing is everything, you can be the highest paid quarterback in the game. That doesn't mean you're the best quarterback in the game. So if the Cowboys take you to that next level, unless you're Bill O'Brien with Laremy Tunsil and you feel like next level isn't good enough, we need $6 million more, I just think take that, because as much as you bet on yourself, look, just watching what we've seen, he's not the greatest in the game today. Is he a better than average quarterback? Yes. Is there still more to prove? Sure, but take what you can get and realize you're in a great winning situation right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's got the $31 million, and there's no way he gets that on a yearly basis, is there? You really think he gets in the low 30s?
I'm hearing Cowboys offered between a 3 and 5 year deal that was at 30. Highest paid is Russell Wilson at what, 35? He would have been the highest paid player in the league. So at least for 1 year, he gets 36 or more, and you get multiple years. You take that to the bank, and you don't ever look back, and you don't care.
Yeah, I don't know how you would why you would turn that down, but you know, like you said, he's. He's betting on himself, but boy, that's a risky thing.
Well, and here's the other thing, Barry. Well, we're not talking about all of the media markets we talk about and all the other things we talk about. The Cowboys' marketing machine and popularity worldwide mean something. Because he signed that first contract with the Cowboys. He wasn't making more than, I think, $700,000 a year. But his endorsement deals were in the millions with Chunky Soup and Sleep Number and all these different deals he had. Because everyone knows, if you're the starting quarterback of the Cowboys and you're relevant at all, your marketing dollars are going to be there. And he was making, I think, triple or three times, maybe even more than four or five times what he was making in salary with the Cowboys in endorsements. Just by being the starting quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, you're going to get more than what you get as the highest paid quarterback in the league.
Well, I tell you what, the one thing in his favor is how well he played last year. And if that's what you're going to base some of these negotiations off of, could have done a lot worse. Now, you know, of course, they're going to look at body of work, teams are. But if you're Dak Prescott, and you can say, dude, look what I'm capable of. Look what I did. What if he's like 30 and 10 or something like that? I mean, like, look what I can go out and do for your team. I think he averaged over 300 yards passing a game.
Yeah, he didn't win enough to make the playoffs, but he was the best numbers quarterback in the league last year.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's to his advantage. But the counter of that is, yeah, but that was the one year where you had those kinds of numbers. Can you do it consistently? Somebody's going to pay the man, whether it's the Cowboys or somebody else. But I think that I've never been sold on Dak Prescott being great. But last year was a long way in proving it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, somebody's going to take a chance, because I think Dak is kind of the guy, is that kind of quarterback where, you know, I always say this. And when it comes to quarterback, what's the one thing you have to ask yourself? Can you win a Super Bowl with this quarterback? And I think more teams would say yes than no with Dak Prescott, which is why it's worth a flyer, why it's worth trying.
There you go. That'll wrap up hour number two of the show. Still got an hour to go. And, oh, by the way, speaking of quarterbacks without a job in the NFL, there's a pretty big named one that made a statement that has some heads kind of trying to get everything digested and try to make sense of a statement he made recently. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more as we open up the final 60 minutes of the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.